Keeping up on Seattle area politics is tough. Who has time to sit through a three-hour council meeting and sort out which decisions will affect you most?
Please vote aye.
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 Well, what if getting caught up on current events was as simple as getting a cup of coffee with some City Hall insiders who know which stories are hot and which are not? Welcome to Seattle News, Views, and Brews.
Okay, thanks for being with us on Seattle News, Views, and Brews, where the coffee's hot and the topics are even hotter. Here we go. I'm Brian Callanan. I'm a host on Seattle Channel. The views expressed here are my own. And alongside me is Seattle City Council Insights, Kevin Schofield. Kevin, good to have you here again.
Hey, thanks, and I have no views whatsoever on it.
So. Right, we'll see how this goes. A special thanks, as always, to City Grind Espresso, the owners John and Charlie. They run the coffee stand on the first floor of City Hall, but far more importantly, they are our background noise sponsor. Thank you very much. So, let's get going with Right Here, Right Now. Okay, so in this part of the show, we're looking at what our local leaders have on the docket right now during this second full week of February. And Kevin, looking ahead here at just what the City Council's working on specifically, the Seattle Police Officers Guild negotiations with the police department here, a really big topic they're trying to tackle this week.
That's right. And the city's in a bind. They want to get out from underneath the consent decree. Judge Robart, who oversees the consent decree, has said you need to figure out police accountability. And the city knows that they have to negotiate some terms with SPOG, the Seattle Police Officers Guild. They're the union for the frontline officers.
Yep.
In order to get to where they need with police accountability to make the judge happy.
Yeah.
And they've got a round of negotiations that start on the contracts coming up in March.
And the big piece of this is, in terms of behind the scenes, there is a new SPOG president, Mike Solon, much more of a hardline negotiator. He was quoted in the Seattle Times as saying he wants to change the activist narrative in Seattle politics. He replaces the incumbent, Kevin Stuckey, really seen as more of a behind-the-scenes kind of guy. Stuckey was quoted as saying, I just want to be quiet and move on when it comes to what's happening here with this consent decree. But Solon got 70% of the vote, begins his work at the start of March here. So are we talking about kind of new negotiation teams that need to come together, or what do you see happening?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a new negotiation team.
Yeah.
And just in the past 2 weeks, the city council has passed a resolution laying out what they think are the priorities for this round of negotiations, which very much ties to the police accountability issues,
yeah.
The Office of Police Accountability, Office Inspector General,
yeah.
The Community Police Commission, and the
this
council.
This is how complaints or whatever else kind of go
yeah,
up the ladder.
They all seem to be on the same page as to what these priorities are,
mm-hmm.
And it's going to be tough negotiating with SPOG, with the new president on this.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think it's interesting to look back at this. The different pieces that the city has been working through, the police department has been working through, the city attorney, I just talked with him recently about this. He felt pretty bullish, and I'm hearing you say this too. The different sides involved here, at least as of a month ago, were thinking, hey, this is something that we're really close here. I just wonder with this new dynamic, if are they farther apart? Is this, 70% of SPOG voted for this new leader in Mike Solon, and I just wonder if that's an indicator of some sort.
Yeah, and we'll just have to see what happens in the negotiations.
Okay, all right. All right, so basically what we're talking about right now in terms of public safety, a lot on that. We've had a big spotlight, of course, on what's happening with the downtown shootings in the Seattle area. A big spotlight on Lisa Herbold. We're talking about this issue when it comes to SPOG negotiations and figuring out a response to those shootings. She's got a lot on her plate right now.
She does. She just took over in her committee oversight of the Seattle Police Department from Councilmember Gonzalez, who
right.
is now the council president.
Yep.
And that's going to be a big ramp up for her on those issues.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit about what's happening with winter evictions. So a big vote expected this week. It was delayed a week as some different details were worked out here. This was the measure put forth by Councilmember Shama Sawant talking about banning evictions essentially from November through March. And there's a little bit of infighting going on, believe it or not, in City Hall. A memo was sent to Councilmember Sawant's office from Nathan Torgelson, the director of the Seattle Department of Construction and Inspections, also listed there, the Office of Housing, Human Services Department, Seattle Housing Authority, and that memo expressed some deep concerns about what's happening with this winter eviction ban. So there was a lot of pushback from Councilmember Sawant. She actually sent a memo to Mayor Durkin directly, and an interesting back and forth. Councilmember Sawant published her memo as well as the memo she received from the SDCI. And so here's what Councilmember Sawant said about it. She wrote, "I wish to dispense at the start with the fiction that this memo was produced by department directors to share their knowledge and expertise. In fact, I found your memo," she's speaking to Mayor Durkin here, "to be almost entirely devoid of concrete data or examples, relying instead on hypothetical arguments that are reminiscent of the ones from big business when our movement was fighting for the $15 per hour minimum wage." Wow, there's a little bit of a scrap going on here. What's happening next with the winter evictions ban, Kevin, from your perspective?
Well, so it's coming up for vote on Monday,
yeah.
And Councilmember Strauss has said that he wants to bring some amendments forth, though we haven't seen those amendments yet.
Councilmember Strauss, right, okay.
Yeah, and Councilmember Lewis has said that he wants to work on a mitigation fund so that if landlords are, without rent and they can't evict the people and get a rent-paying tenant in place, that they have some recourse so it doesn't become a major financial liability for them.
Yeah.
And we're just going to have to see what happens with that. I think this back and forth is really interesting.
Yeah.
The memo from the department directors raises a bunch of issues about, first of all, the legality of this kind of...
I have to think it's going to be challenged immediately by the Landlords Association.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's going to be immediately challenged in court. But then there's issues about whether you'll even do what it's hoped to do, whether it'll just cause there to be more evictions during the summer,
I see.
And whether it will cause kind of informal evictions where landlords find other ways to force tenants out rather than go through the formal process of it.
Yeah, and I think the big backstory here, and you hear it from a lot of the different landlords involved or whatever else, in terms of all the effort, the energy that's going to this winter eviction ban bill that Councilmember Sawant's working on, why not direct that energy toward actually connecting people with resources that the county, the city actually have on hand right now to prevent evictions from happening?
Yeah, and the city council did a bunch of the work last year to create those and fund support for tenants, financial support for tenants, and more resources and education for tenants to make sure that they understand their rights, that they have longer time if they get an eviction notice to make it right.
Yeah, and overshadowing all of this is a state bill put out by Senator Fortunato that would ban cities in Washington from enacting such a ban. So I don't know what's going to happen there. I know he's also running for governor, so who knows exactly what kind of gauntlet he's laying down there.
And it's a short session in the state legislatures this year, and they're already coming up on deadlines. So if that doesn't move out pretty quickly, it's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, interesting to watch that. All right, let's switch it up to Now Hear This. Okay, this is a part of the program where we review some of the activity over the last week and listen in to what city leaders are saying about it. So, whole lot of shouting going on regarding an India citizenship resolution that was before the Seattle City Council, presented by Councilmember Sawant. We're going to listen in right here. This was a situation where a number of people showed up of Indian descent in Seattle City Council chambers. It turned into a big scrap. I want you to listen in to what Pro Tem President Teresa Mosqueda, Councilmember Teresa Mosqueda, had to go through as this was happening. Let's listen in.
Three groups, and we will resume with the list as long as we can. The alternative is that we end public testimony. Okay. We're going to go ahead and take a recess. I'll take a five-minute recess. Five-minute recess.
So, Kevin, this was an acrimonious meeting, to say the least, and we're talking about a resolution which deals with an international issue, and the city council has done that before, but in terms of the amount of time they spent, the effort that went into this, the emotions that were spilling over there, I'm just wondering what happened. A lot of people were shocked to see what happened in council chambers there.
Well, it was clearly a divisive issue just with the Indian American population here in the Seattle area.
Yeah.
And this came up... Because you could argue Councilmember Sawant introduced this, because they were hearing from constituents that this is an important issue, that it's important to them to speak up about this.
A new citizenship act that went into effect at the end of 2019.
Right, and it's controversial because it seems to favor Hindus above Muslims and other minorities in India as far as citizenship goes.
Right.
And the issues around this are very complicated. There are very strong opinions on both sides, both pro and against this. And, you know, it's interesting listening to some of the other city council members talk about this. Councilmember Lewis was pretty clear in his comments on this that he didn't run for office to spend a couple hours on a Monday afternoon debating, you know, the foreign policy and, you know, internal issues in India on this.
Not that it isn't an important issue,
But at the same time, hearing from constituents here in Seattle, this is an important issue for them.
Mm-hmm.
He felt it was important that he pay attention and learn up about this and, you know, express a view on this.
Yeah.
And Sawant has said that she brings up these sorts of resolutions in the council to drive grassroots movements, to empower them, make them feel like they're heard, and give them more ammunition to go out and deliver their message.
It's a really different take on the function of the city council, I guess. And I really look at this going forward. And I know we've talked about this on the podcast before. Maybe a little bit of a power struggle we're seeing here at the start of the year. Councilmember Sawant introducing an issue that was, gosh, a landmine for Teresa Mosqueda to step into on her first day back on the job, for that matter, after her parental leave here. Is it a situation where, I know we're waiting a few months until Council President Gonzalez comes back onto the council there, without that voice being there, I'm just wondering where we are in the council right now. It looks like Councilmember Sawant is pushing a lot of initiatives at the start of this year, and our council members, some of them very new faces here, have to react to them in some way.
They do, and I think what this really pushes on is, you know, while we spent a lot of time during the election campaign last year arguing about conservative versus progressive and the spectrum there with a lot of the candidates, I think maybe a more interesting spectrum to look at is activist versus focus on good governance.
Yeah. Right?
Well, we've got Sawant, who's super activist on one end. We've got Alex Peterson on the other end, who's super focused on good governance, which is why his committee is overseeing transportation and there are two big utilities that are run by the city.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot of council members in the middle who want to spend some time focusing on good governance, who want to spend some time on these activist issues.
Yeah.
And then there's this tug of war about how much of the council's time is spent debating and deliberating and pushing through legislation that's more focused on one end or the other. And then we get these issues such as the shootings downtown.
Yeah, right.
Where lots of citizens are raising issues about the good governance issues around this. And then to see the city council spend 2 hours on Monday focused on a resolution about internal politics of India is pretty dissonant for a lot of folks in the town. So I think we're going to hear more of these kinds of issues in debate.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that happens, especially when Councilmember Gonzalez comes back on board in April there. Let's move on, if we can. I wanted to tackle the state plan to tax big businesses. We're talking about House Bill 2907. We touched on this earlier in the podcast. This is something that's actually, as we speak right now in Olympia, there's a hearing that's happening as we're recording this program here, this podcast. There's a hearing that's happening just to see if this is actually going to get out of committee. So we're at a very important time here. This a possible countywide business tax for King County here. I just hear that a lot of smaller cities really aren't buying in yet. What's going on here, Kevin?
Yeah, so it's interesting that most of the businesses in King County have actually come out in support of this.
And
small businesses too.
Yeah.
Small businesses don't care so much because they'll probably mostly be exempted from this.
Yeah, okay.
And grocery stores will be exempted from this as well.
Yes, right. Liquor stores too.
Earlier this week in another state legislature committee hearing, there's a number of the smaller cities in King County said not so much that they're opposed to it, but they haven't been involved.
Yeah.
So they want to be involved in the process of defining what this is, because obviously it's something that their citizens would be taxed for as well. But the big issue here in Seattle is whether this piece of legislation would actually preempt Seattle from having its own business tax as well. And obviously, the city council here is, you know, pretty much against any time they're preempted from doing something on their own.
Sure, right.
And they definitely feel strongly that they want to be able to do their own Amazon tax.
Sure.
Particularly if you're, you know, Councilmember Sawant.
Yeah.
It's an Amazon tax.
Which is what she calls it, yeah.
Tax in general.
Yeah.
And you know, so the issues are flying back and forth, and that's really going to be kind of the big one as to whether it gets the city support. But it doesn't, you know, the city council members don't vote on the state bill.
That's right. That's right.
They can voice their opinion.
Pass resolutions, that kind of thing.
And,
yeah.
And push hard on the city's delegation in Olympia.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to have their way on this.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see when we talk about head tax, this was something that really seemed like anathema to some of our bigger businesses not too long ago. But now we see Amazon, a huge name, lining up in support of this. Expedia talking about support of it. Microsoft talking about that too. I look at that though, and I almost think that this 40 million or so that would actually come out of this that go to Seattle, are they thinking, okay, we'll go for the lesser here and try to get off the hook rather than some bigger measure that, like, Councilmember Sawant has been talking about, which is a much higher number than that?
Yeah, I think there are three motivations for this. And it's probably a mix of all three.
Yeah.
One is certainly this question of whether this is a small concession to avoid a much larger concession in the future.
Yeah.
Whether they're really kind of doing the right thing and kind of rallying behind the new regional homeless authority.
Yes,
behind
right.
This.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we're going to do something like this, let's do this at the county level rather than
yeah.
doing it sort of at city by city level.
Yes.
And the third part is, you know, which one do they trust more? Do they trust the King County Council more
yeah.
or the Seattle City Council more? And I
yeah.
think they're voting with their statement here that they yeah. that they actually trust that the King County Council would come up with something a little more kind of reasonable middle of the road on this.
And it's interesting to point out, King County Council has had some back and forth on this too. I know Reagan Dunn has not been all that happy about this. One voice, I guess, on the council.
Right.
Do you see that? Where do you see that debate going? Because we've got the smaller cities. I remember City of Kent was testifying about this and saying, hey, nobody ever told us this was even going on. So
right.
This is going to be a very interesting debate within, at the county level there, I think.
Yeah, I think it will. I think you'll probably get a more diverse set of opinions
yeah.
at the county level than you will at the Seattle City Council.
Yeah, all right. We will see what happens next with that piece of legislation from the state, and we'll keep an eye on that right here on the podcast. We are going to start wrapping up our show with What's Next? All right, Kevin, you are rolling in here to the podcast today. I think you were out of breath as you were cruising up the stairs there because you had just come from a hearing on Initiative 976, the Tim Iman $30 car tab measure. I know this is a long, long court process we're talking about here. What did you hear? It sounds like it was a little bit of the shouting and stuff that we've seen in the past with this issue.
Well, there wasn't really any shouting
this
morning. It was all lawyers kind of doing the lawyering thing.
Okay.
There's a hearing that's going to be going on all day from hearing from both sides. They,
mm-hmm.
They're competing motions for summary judgment to try to wrap this thing up quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The judge said that he's actually going to issue his ruling next week. He's going to aim for earlier in the week, but he also said this is really complex. I don't know if I'm going to get it all sorted out by the early in the week.
Yeah.
So I think next week we're going to hear what at least his resolution is. This is going to get, once again, though, appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court again. That
yeah.
doesn't mean the Supreme Court will hear this, but you know, it's not going to be ended next week when he issues his judgment. And there's strong arguments on both sides, so we'll just
yeah.
have to see how this plays out.
And this is one of those situations too where Tim Iman has not had a lot of luck in court with his initiatives in the past, and I think we're seeing some of the similar modes of attack for the Attorney General's office, at least on this one, when it comes to did this initiative have more than one topic in its
right.
In its title and whatever else. Let me know about that. There are a lot of different arguments going on. I think on that level, what else is being argued?
Well, so there's a bunch of arguments about whether it was sloppy, whether it was deceitful,
yes.
you know, whether they lie. They said, you know, the title says it's a $30 car tabs, and it's not, right? Minimum, it's going to be $42.50 or
okay.
something like that.
Okay.
So that was just a lie.
Yeah.
And so there's one argument is just since they lied in the title, you know, it
should be thrown out. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't lie to the voters in
yeah.
the title.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
So the whole thing is out.
Yeah.
But there's other issues around whether it impairs bonds that Sound Transit and City Burien
mm-hmm.
have passed based on an assumption they could collect these kinds of taxes that are now outlawed
okay.
by 976.
Okay.
There's you know, a number of other kind of down in the weeds issues
yep.
about.
You're good at the weeds, Kevin. I can't wait to read about this.
I'm very weedy, though. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, great. And this has really turned into a statewide show. Franklin County Commissioner Clint Didier making the trip over to hang out with Tim Iman, who is also running for governor. Who isn't these days?
And he was there this morning with
yeah.
his $30 car tab sticker.
Yes, yes, yes. We'll see how that one pans out. I wanted to move on to one last story here, Kevin, as we're moving on. This discussion about ORCA for all. This is something we heard a lot about during the fall 2019 election cycle for the city council, the Transit Riders Union, one of the many activist groups pushing for this. This idea to try to give more transit benefits to more people. What's going on with this? What's the chatter right now?
So in the past couple of years, the city council has and the mayor have been a lot more generous in terms of trying to get ORCA cards out to students, to seniors, to low-income folks. Mm-hmm. So either they can get free transit or deeply discounted transit,
right.
Which both is an equity issue in terms of, you know, getting people accessibility to education and to jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also an issue of getting people out of cars.
Yeah, transportation issue, big time.
Getting more people into public transit. And so the push right now is to say, well, maybe we should rethink the way we, you know, ask companies to provide transit benefits to their own employees. Right now, there are a lot of employers who give transit benefits to their employees, but mostly it's aimed at the ones who are making a lot of money already.
Okay.
Right? Whereas the people who could really use it more, the ones sort of doing the service, working class jobs, aren't necessarily getting those transit benefits.
Okay.
And so they're looking at legislation to say, maybe we should require employers to sort of prioritize giving those transit benefits to really the workers who can most benefit from them.
Right. And the idea, I think, long term is to make transit free throughout the city, which is a big goal, I think.
It's a big goal. There's a lot of revenues that come into Metro and Sound Transit.
Have the fares be free.
It's not today. And they'd have to really restructure the way they fund transit to do that. And that's a big lift, and it's unclear if that would happen. There are city officials and county officials who are for that, but it's not unanimous.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that one. Okay, and final update here, folks. Kevin has been telling me over the past couple weeks, just started a cooking class. He's working on creating the perfect macaron. Apparently, he made some very recently, but did not bring them into the podcast.
I feel terrible for this.
We got to sample that next week.
Be a macaron.
All right, that sounds like a plan. Okay, well, thank you for joining us on Seattle News, Views, and Brews. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Thank you.
And the next time you want to know what's going on in local politics, give us a listen and find out what's brewing. You can reach us via email at seattlenewsviewsandbrews@gmail.com. Also, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio. We got you covered. Thanks for listening.
Seattle News, Views, and Brews is an independent production of Callinan Media Services. Copyright 2020.